Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.
Right. So, this week we've been looking at Esther and Mordecai, and the theme of this quarter's lesson is God's mission, my mission. So we've been looking at how the story of Esther and Mordecai plays into the idea of mission and ministry. So the title of today's lesson, or rather yesterday's, The Miracle of Purim. If you could briefly, Alda, if you could briefly for us tell us, what is it, what is Purim, and what is it that constitutes as a miracle when it comes to the story, just for the sake of those who do not know the story in detail? Did you get me? Hello? Hello, Alda? Oh, there seems to be a problem with the line. I cannot get him at all. I'm going to try and reconnect with Alda Ramodise. In the meantime, let me talk to you. How is your day going so far? How is your December going so far? Are you looking forward to 2024? Is it daunting, the idea of 2024? What's the idea? What's the vibe? And Elder Derek did say it in the morning. It is holiday, yes, but that does not mean it's a time for us to lose ourselves. It's so easy to lose yourself in the noise of enjoyment and having fun. But don't lose yourself. Don't lose your principles. Don't compromise anything for the sake of enjoyment. Enjoyment is temporary, but consequences are everlasting. So have fun, yes. Not to say that now you must be sitting at home doing nothing, but have fun, socialize, meet up with friends, meet up with family, have your lunches, your brunches, your dinners, have your braais, have your gatherings, go to the pool, go to the park, go to the museum, do what you must to enjoy this holiday to the fullest, but enjoy it in moderation. Enjoy it without crossing lines that we should not be crossing. I will be with you here next week. I don't know how many of you will spare the time to be tuned in to our discussion, our discussions over the course of the week. But for the few, even if it's just one person, we are going to be spending next week together as well. So I am looking forward to that. But for those of you who will be up and about enjoying your holidays, please be careful, look after yourselves, always pray before you go in and out. And, you know, we ask that God protects each and every one of us so that we all meet again safe and sound in 2024, should it be His will. You know, I used to have an issue with that statement, like, according to God's will, because it's like you're saying there's a potential that it could go bad if God wants it to go bad. But I've maybe like have a new perspective of understanding what His will is. So I know it doesn't necessarily mean that God wants people to die, but if He wills it that they should live, let us live. Right? If they die, it's not God who killed them. It's their health. It's that and that. It's whatever it is. However, if He wills it that they should live, let them live. I think we managed to get the elder again. Hello, elder. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Okay. I hear you now. All right. We are back. Thank you so much. I was keeping my fingers crossed and the prayers going to make sure that you do manage to reconnect with us. So I don't know if you managed to hear my question earlier. I was saying the title of Thursday's section says The Miracle of Purim. So I wanted to ask if you could just briefly explain what this miracle is, what Purim is, for the sake of people who might not know the story of Esther in detail.
Okay. On Wednesday, we spoke about, if you remember, we spoke about irreversibility of
yes.
the cause of the Medes and Persians.
Yes.
How when the decree was made, it could not be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned how the law that Haman managed to enact to destroy the Jews was not reversed. It could not be reversed. However, the miracle is that in spite of that law, subsequent law, which was given for the Jews to allow them to defend themselves, led to a situation such that the Jews were not only saved, but were enriched by their defense of themselves and keeping the plunder of those that that tried to attack them. So Purim is really a commemoration of the surviving a law that was enacted to destroy them, and surviving it in such a magnificent way that they came out even in a better situation than they had been before it was enacted. That's really how I understand Purim.
I think that makes a lot of sense. It's very clear, and it does. You did connect it to what we discussed on Wednesday. So, for those who are not tuned in or reading the lesson, we are looking at Esther's story, and we had reached the point where Haman had influenced a decree that would jeopardize the lives of the Jews, and because of that, something needed to happen, otherwise the entire Jewish race was going to be wiped out in that city. So because of prayer, because of the efforts of Esther, her courage and all of that, things managed to change. And like the elder has said, this is now a commemoration to say that this could have been the end, but God made a way, and now we're able to overcome the challenge that was ahead of us, which is a great thing. So now what I mean, it must have been so chaotic, because as much as the law was altered, it still was not a pleasant situation, because it still was fighting. People probably did lose their lives on both ends. So what good came out of this chaos, besides the fact that the Jews could not defend themselves? What good, in context of what our theme of this quarter is, when it comes to God's mission, my mission, what good came out of this whole situation that happened during Esther's time?
Well, the good is really encapsulated in verse 17 of chapter 8. In Esther, and if I can read it,
okay.
It says, in every province and in every city to which the edict of the king came, there was joy and gladness among the Jews. This is the edict for them to be able to defend themselves.
Right.
There was joy and gladness among the Jews with feasting and celebrating. And here's the good that you are asking me about. Many people of nationalities became Jews because fear of the Jews had seized them. So from a point of view of leading people to a knowledge of God, this thing that had happened to the Jews, where on the on one day they are condemned to die, and on the other, they are empowered to defend themselves.
Right.
It shone a spotlight, I believe, on the God of these people, who could rescue them from certain death as a result of the edict of the king. Mm-hmm. And because of that, because people began to God of these Jews, many of them became Jews because they were awed by what had happened to the Jews.
So, and this is like, as you're speaking, I'm just thinking that, especially in the Old Testament, this occurs in so many instances and in so many people's stories. When you think of Daniel and the three Hebrew boys, when you think of the Israelites themselves, their whole journey from Egypt to the Promised Land, there was instances where God's hand shone was shining in their lives, and it was something that could then draw people closer to this God of the Jews. So I'm seeing now that sometimes when we think situations are bad and we are in like down and out, that when God takes us out of those situations, we don't always really think of the influence that has on the people who are watching what is happening to us. So then does that mean that we now need to be cognizant of the message we tell people about God without actually verbalizing anything about it? I don't know if you understand my question.
If I understand your question, if I can maybe try and rephrase it, does this mean that we should pay particular attention to how we conduct ourselves in mm-hmm. front of unbelief?
Mm-hmm.
And really, the answer is self-evident, right? If you look at Daniel and what happened to him and the outcome of his behavior after he had been rescued from the lion's den, if you remember what then the king ordered,
mm-hmm.
that people should worship the God of Daniel, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, forced worship is no worship at all, obviously.
Right.
We know that.
Right.
But what that did is that, once again, to borrow the phrase I used earlier, mm-hmm. it shone a spotlight mm-hmm. on the God of Daniel that would otherwise have not been shown had Daniel just acquiesced to the... you know, to the laws at the time and not stood out the way he did. So our conduct ought to cause people to contend with our God. I'm not sure if that comes across clearly, but it should cause people to want to know the God who causes us to behave the way we do.
Right.
The side of this, of course, is that our conduct can also drive away people from the God that we proclaim. So it is very important to ensure that it doesn't. You know, the worst thing that can be said, I think, about us by anybody who observes how we behave is that if your God causes you to become the kind of person that you are, I want nothing to do with him.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the worst condemnation that, in my mind, that people could say about us,
right,
and about our faith.
Right.
So we've got to be mindful that our conduct is as loud as our speech, if not louder, and we need to be careful about how people view it.
Mm. And then, the story, of course, was like a look at Mordecai and Esther, but I just want to focus on the Esther part of it. We know that women and men are different, right? And the way that we do things is different. The way that we approach different situations and challenges will be different. So looking at women like Esther, who were very integral in the work of God throughout the course of the Bible, what lessons can we draw from how they handled challenges in how we can also embody those same qualities when we face challenges in our time now?
I think that, you know, the way we have been raised, the way we have been socialized, sometimes takes away from a very important truth that God is no respecter of persons, even respecter of gender. That God can use anybody who is willing. And because of how society has been structured from time immemorial, really,
mm-hmm.
we tend to lose the lessons that that come from the behavior of very important women. Important in the sense, I mean, all people are important.
Right, right.
When I say important women, I'm important in the sense that in their time, influenced society in ways that men probably would not have. You know, I suspect that a random man in the palace of King Xerxes would not have caused the king to want to extend the golden scepter and invite him into his presence. Right? Esther was uniquely placed to be able to do that.
Right.
She was uniquely placed to be able to walk in front of the king. Now, we could say that it had to do with her beauty, it had to do with her elegance.
Mm.
That might all be true. The point is that whatever it is about her, she was uniquely placed to be able to have an audience with the king that would save a nation, right? Some of us as men would never be able to do certain things that women
are able to do.
And I think as long as it does not cross the line or violate principle, we need to applaud the role that women have to play by virtue of being women. The power that they bring to bear, even upon the dissemination of the gospel, by virtue of being women.
Mm-hmm.
We must not downplay that, and we must not negate it in our efforts to be useful in God's work, in God's mission.
We all have a part to play, whether it is by our gender, whether it's our placement in terms of workplace or family or whatever it is, influence. We all have a role to play in the greater work of God's mission. Thank you so much. Do you have any closing remarks, words of encouragement that you can share regarding our quarter's theme or this week's lesson with our listeners?
Now, I think my parting words really would be the what we identified as the central theme of the book of Esther, that wherever it is that we are located in our lives, whatever it is that we are called upon to do, we must never lose sight of the possibility that that could quite possibly be the main reason we were put on earth in the first place. You know, it is quite possible that wherever it is you are, whatever it is that you are doing, you were put there by God for this time, for a time such as this. And so it is important to always be tuned in to God's leading and to God's injunction upon the lives, and do his will, because that may be, we may be executing the primary purpose for our very existence.
That is very clear. Thank you so much, Elder, for carrying us this week with this discussion. I'm sure there's so much that people have learned, and I hope that God continues to bless you in all the work that you do and for the time that you have volunteered to assist us this week.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
Awesome. That was Elder Ramudise. And that concludes our lesson study of the week. I hope that you were blessed. I hope that there's lessons that you were able to draw from the life and the story of Esther, because there is so much that we can learn in terms of how your placement is not coincidental. There is a reason you're in the space that you are in. There is a reason why God has blessed you in the position that you are in. And the only way to do right by God's placement is to seek guidance from him. The same way that Esther sought guidance from God. They fasted, the whole nation, they fasted and prayed. And they asked God, God, listen, we need help. This is a very dire situation. Please help us. And God did come through. And for that, we are grateful. Thank you so much, Elder Ramudise. And hopefully we will have you again in the future to share more wisdom on what God has for us in his word.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.